Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. Thank you again to Pastor Jeffrey Rickman for joining me. Check out his podcast if you're interested. If you're a Methodist and you're interested in what's going on, and he does a lot of other stuff there too, but it's Plain Spoken is the podcast. And there's another one I mentioned earlier that I'd seen in some doing some of the research over the last several days, and I only found out like on the last episode or something that I watched about it. He mentioned he's in Charlotte. I didn't even know he was in Charlotte. It's called Disciple Dojo, I think is the name of it. I think that's right. Disciple Dojo. And they covered some of this general conference stuff going on with the United Methodist Church as well. The Charlotte Observer also covered it last week. I did do a segment on this last week, kind of springboarding off of the Observer's editorial that was like, yay, LGBT rights, you know, inside the church. Love is love. And that's how it's all being argued. But there is a political side of this, you know, and this was some of my criticism for a long time with the Catholic Church as well. And, you know, people kind of forget that the Catholic Church was also a government, you know, for a very, very long time, hundreds of years, acted as a government. So anytime you have humans that are building or maintaining these institutions, they're going to get corrupted because we are all corruptible and corrupted. And so, like, it's not a surprise when people abuse others in these institutions or they twist, you know, through reinterpretation or assumptions of motive or whatever. They twist their teachings, they twist the institution, they twist the words in the Bible, whatever. Like, that, all of this stuff has been happening forever. And so the UMC coming into town, into Charlotte from all over the world, if they got their invites in time, but they're coming in and they're having these debates. And to me, look, I'm not a Methodist. Okay. But some of my best friends are Methodists, me not being a Methodist, I'm just kind of looking at it from the outside. And the stories I hear and the way that the general church has behaved exhibit a lot of the same characteristics of other corrupted institutions and bureaucracies. And I'm not saying corrupted like, there's embezzlement or whatever. I'm not making any kind of like criminal accusations or anything. I just say corrupted as in problems, right? That they've lost sight of the mission or whatever. And the biggest one for me, and you're seeing this play out everywhere, virtually everywhere, which is the pushing and the antagonism and the transgression against the institutions and the institutions being unable or unwilling to punish or remove the transgressors. And maybe that's more difficult in a Christian church that is seeking to not only, you know, forgive, if I'm, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt and not ascribe more nefarious motives, that's, you know, that you want to forgive and you want to get along and you're not trying to be mean or vengeful or whatever. When you say these are the rules and then someone comes along and they say, we don't like these rules, we disagree with those rules, and we're going to now ignore those rules and we're going to disrupt and we're going to antagonize and we're going to force you to take action against us. because it's performative. A lot of this stuff is performative. And when the institution does not do anything, you can say, okay, well, it's Christian, and so therefore it's a matter of forgiveness or, you know, being nice or whatever. On the other hand, it could also be power and money, right? Maybe people in these particular congregations or these districts or states or whatever, these units of the administrative structure, these are powerful pastors or elders or whatever inside the church. Also, they could be very wealthy, right? Maybe the apportionments that are getting kicked up to the general church are a lot of money. And if a church is going more liberal, more, quote, woke, and look, there, everybody inside the UMC in the Charlotte area, y'all know who those churches are. You know who those pastors are, right? There are Facebook groups celebrating all sorts of things that are in defiance of the UMC Book of Discipline, all their rules and whatever. They got a lot of rules. They got a lot of rules. So I'm not ascribing motive to every single person involved because I don't know all of the people involved. And it doesn't frankly matter much to me who all the people involved are. It's just the same symptoms of the same sort of affliction, right? That we see in K-12 education. We see it in the academy, right? In colleges. It's Marxism. And I think at this point now, like I've talked about, I've railed against communism, right? I trash talk commies all the time. I'm not changing that. And I think like part of my, challenge in trying to label myself, because I am in media and that's what we do. We label people. And if you don't believe me, go watch your local newscast. And whenever they have an interview with somebody out in front of their house that just got ripped up by a storm or something, right? They've got a label right underneath the person's name. It's witness, neighbor, victim, friend of victim, whatever, right? You have to come up with a way to describe somebody either by a title or a descriptor. And so when I consider myself lowercase L libertarian, conservatarian, whatever, I think really at the end of it all, I'm just your run-of-the-mill anti-communist. I think that's really what it is. That is it. I really don't like the communism. And that is the thing that united the three legs of Reagan's Republican, the stool, you know, the three legs of the chair there. It was anti-communism, which is anti-collectivism, right, at its core. This idea united all of these different factions, the evangelicals and the Christian, right, and, as well as the more libertarian coalition. You also had then the war hawks that were anti-commie as well. And everybody was willing to kind of get along with each other and overlook the differences because the anti-communism thing united all of those factions. And when the wall fell and the Soviet Union broke apart, now the thing, the glue that held all of those factions together was no longer there. And we didn't want to identify China as being communist for some reason or another. But it has not gone away. The philosophy has not died. James Lindsay writes at newdiscourses.com. And I've quoted him numerous times over the years, and I really do think he's doing a lot of the intellectual work that undergirds the fight that you have to have. And by the way, you always have to have like these different areas of expertise. In any kind of battle, in any kind of revolution or whatever, you always need to have people that are sort of like your philosophical, ideological. The brain trust, right? The ones who kind of come up with the philosophy. Marxism is the same way, right? You have the people who came up with the philosophy, then you have the foot soldiers, right? You have the people who understand how to apply that practically and what. Anyway, so you get all these different groups. And James Lindsay, I think, does a lot of the intellectual work. He's also on the front lines. He does speeches all over the place. But he wrote and did a podcast months ago, maybe a year or so ago, talking about the churches. The churches, he said, are under attack, not just from without, but also from within. Marxist subversion, because remember, this isn't this isn't necessarily about LGBTQ plus 2IA, whatever. It's like, it's because remember, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution, right? It's whatever they needed it to be. This is why you have this ridiculous intersection of the pro-Hamas crowd and gays. And anybody with half a brain recognizes that if gays were in Hamas-controlled territory, they'd be dead, right? Because the issue isn't the issue. The issue is Marxist revolution. Marxist subversion has been brought deeply into the churches, and they're already falling. The model for how this is being accomplished mirrors the model used to steal education. So it's little surprise that the Brazilian Marxist educator, Paulo Freire, is at the bottom of all of it. His landmark 1985 book called The Politics of Education, Culture, Power, and Liberation, he saw churches as educational platforms, which they are. They absolutely are. They're just teaching different stuff. It's an education platform. Mike, I'll get to Mike here. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Pete. Hey. Good afternoon. How you doing this Monday?
I am well, sir. How are you?
Very well. Thanks very much. I've listened with great interest to that view, and it was interesting to me. I listened for most of the hour as I could, but throughout all the discussion, you know, I didn't hear the name Jesus mentioned until like you were 58 minutes into it, and I wanted to ask
that's not true.
Tommy earlier, and he knew you didn't want to interrupt the interview, and I understood that. But I wish I'd been able to ask, where does the teachings of Jesus fit into his discussion?
Yeah,
because
Mike.
Mike, hang on.
Number one. Number one. Your assessment that Jesus was not mentioned until 58 minutes in is not accurate. It was actually...
I listened a lot, and I didn't hear a lot of it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Right. Well, it wasn't 58 minutes, and I can tell you it definitely wasn't, because the hour of content is not 58 minutes long. So I know that's not true, first off. Second of all, when we started the conversation, he talked about that. But also, the issues that we were discussing weren't about the theological roots of the disagreement. That's all. That's for UMC people to have out amongst themselves. That's not my purpose. Is not to engage in a theological discussion about it. And as I said before, the LGBT issues that were at the heart of some of the disagreement, not all of them. It's way more than just the LGBT issues. It's the defiance of rules. It's also property stuff. There's all this other stuff going on. There's an institutional problem going on with the upper sort of management, the administrators of the institution, and a lot of the different members. So it's not specifically about the social issues. That is a component of it.
It seemed to me that what was disturbing him was the fact that various folks were being included by some of what he labeled the more progressive liberal activist folks within the denomination, and he called it at the beginning, you know, people were peeing in the pool, and sort of affects everybody in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me, in my attempts to, you know, read the Gospels, that Jesus, if anything, was about bringing people in.
That's fine.
The least, the lost, the last, the lonely, the marginalized. Mike, hang on.
You keep wanting to bring this to a theological argument about whether or not gays should be clergy and married and all of that, and that's not the point here. And that wasn't his point either. What their argument is that there are factions inside of the church that have violated rules and were never punished for doing so. They were given the opportunity to leave if they did not like it, right? If you have a different understanding of the teachings of Jesus, that's fine. And in your particular church, whatever it is, I don't know. But if you have a disagreement with your fellow congregants, then you can hash that out with them and reinterpret whatever you want to reinterpret. This is a sort of a process argument. Their beef, and it's not just this one guy, obviously. This is like half of the United Methodist Church, right? They're like, wait a minute, our rules say X, Y, Z, and you've not been enforcing the rules. And now you're going to bring in, you're going to bring people together for this general conference, and you're not going to allow the African congregations to populate the delegations because they're going to vote against you, right? So their concern is the process side of it. Does that, do you understand what the argument is about?
It's... Perhaps I don't, because a lot of what I heard him just talk about were the threats of not following these rules, and that you were going to allow various, you know, again, leftist factions to come in and start including things that the rules say you shouldn't be including.
Right. Well, they say you shouldn't. The rules say you shouldn't. And then they did. They forced it. And then they didn't get in. The rules did not get enforced on those who violated the rules. And so when the other churches see this occurring and they disagree. Now, you look, they disagree with you. It's not that they haven't heard your arguments. They disagree with your interpretation. And if you want to have that theological argument, you're free to go ahead and do that with them.
Will they allow that within these rules?
Will who allow it?
Well, the folks that the pastor you interviewed allow that. Is that what they
They've
want?
Left.
Do they want a theological argument?
They left. Because they left because there was no theological argument being made. They just were being, the rules were being ignored. That's why they left, and that's why all of this is coming to a head now.
Well, I come back to a little bit of, again, and forgive me for this, but it seems to me at the end of the day, this all does come back down to our imperfect human attempts to follow Jesus, who himself was not real big on rules. If there was anything about Jesus' ministry, it was to tell people that all these rules are not really in well keeping with the overall big rule of God's love for you, and it gets lost in the process.
Right.
And it seems to me that's what's getting lost here.
Yeah.
You got a minute for one quick funny story?
I do not. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? I did not mean to cut Mike off like, I'm not mad or anything. I wasn't, like, annoyed or no disgruntlement here. I'm completely gruntled. I was 2 minutes late for the newscast. And Brendan starts pulling out fingernails after 3 minutes. Mine, not his own, but mine. So I had to bail on that. But, no, I understand what Mike wanted to argue over, and that is an argument that he is free to have with fellow members of whatever church he is in, if they're having an argument. And by the way, this fella, Jeffrey Rickman, if you want to have that argument, I don't know if Mike is a Methodist or what, but you know, you can go and send him messages if you would like. You can write him a note. You can debate all of the theology behind all of that stuff, because that's actually what the majority of his podcast is about. It's about theological debates. And so you're free to go to his podcast, his YouTube channel, Plain Spoken, and engage in that theological debate with him directly. My purpose is to highlight the long march through the institutions. And one of the institutions is the church. And that's what is occurring now. And so while wanting, you know, to have this this myopic argument about the very specifics of a theological difference of opinion, blah, 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 but replicated out, it's occurring in every one of these churches. And here's a good explanation. It comes from Gary on the Twitter machine. It's a Pete tweet. And Gary says, it's not that the progressives want to start their own church. They want to destroy the existing one. And that is precisely the plan. Because we have seen it now in all of the mainline Protestant denominations. The same tactic is employed in every one of the churches. Because the progressives, and you know, Mike did not apparently like Pastor Rickman identifying these groups as progressives, but they are, and they identify themselves as such. Go to their Facebook groups. They identify themselves as such. So, I mean, they're literally posing in front of the altar in their, you know, hey, welcome to the new congregation or whatever. And then they've got like the trans flag that they're flying. That's, and in the eyes of some people in these churches, they view that as a competing religion. Again, you don't have to agree with that. And if you would like to have the theological argument with the pastors over their different interpretations, you go right ahead and do that. My point is, this pattern is replicated in all of the institutions. And when the progressive groups in the UMC were given an off-ramp, literally, we're told, here is how you can go ahead and get out from under our rules. If you don't like the rules we have, you can go start your own church, keep your buildings and whatever, and like go start your own deal. And they would not, because that's not the point. The point is to take over yours, to take control of your institution, and now they're sitting on the property, the buildings, the pensions, right? They got all the money and the power and the influence, and they're still trading on the name of the church that was built by generations before them that did not agree with them on certain things, that now you've changed these rules, and the churches that held true to those rules, whether you like them or not. And this is like same thing. And like there's a term for this in Catholicism. They're called cafeteria Catholics. Have you ever heard this term? Where they pick and choose the beliefs they want to go along with. Yeah, Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, right? because I like the idea of Catholicism, but some of these individual things I don't like, right? And so there's a constant pressure campaign to change the rules, to change the beliefs, to reinterpret the theological underpinnings of these religions. And then they splinter them off and they take control of the one that's got the built up brand identity. And this is Paulo Freire. Freire's landmark 1985 book called The Politics of Education, Culture, Power, and Liberation. He saw churches as educational platforms. And the model is simple. Capture the colleges of education and the seminaries, and you get the teachers and the pastors. And once you have them, you get the students and the laity. Tell me that's not what has occurred. Right? Since 1985, so for the last, 40 years, right? We're now approaching 40, isn't that crazy? 40 years since 1985. Leftism, including Marxism, leftism is operational. It is strategic. James Lindsay says leftists proudly publish and disseminate activist guides for their agenda, like the book Beautiful Trouble, which spelled out for anybody who wants to know how to do, quote, transformative activism. And you do it through deliberate and strategic troublemaking, quote, Beautiful Trouble. Disruption, protesting, sit-ins, transgression. That is exactly what the United Methodist Church has been going through for the last 20 years. 30 years, right? All of these institutions have, because it's the long march through them. The tactics are the same. The issue is never the issue. The issue is the revolution. And so while Mike wanted to argue about the particulars of the theology, that is irrelevant to me, because to me, what is relevant is the tactic, because the issue isn't the issue. The issue is the revolution, because you could have started your own church. You could have had your own church, marrying gay people with gay clergy and doing all of the stuff that you want to do, but you didn't want to do it that way, right? You wanted to redefine somebody else's religion. You wanted to make them comply with your beliefs, right? That's what you did. Beautiful trouble, right? This is activist principles that lay out, you know, your target's reaction is your real action. Again, your target's reaction is your real action, right? So the thing that you are doing by going and disrupting the United Methodist event, their meetings, whatever, you're ordaining gay people, even though you're not supposed to be doing that. You're marrying gay people and you're not supposed to be doing that, right? The disobedience, right? That's not the real action. The action is the reaction. You get people to overreach. You get them to say, you're out of the church now. And then, oh my gosh, I'm the victim. And you get all the media covered, right? That's the action. It's the reaction. Put your target in a decision dilemma and then escalate strategically. All of their activism contains a performative element, by the way, like theater. Why? Well, you're trying to sway public or political opinion. And one of the other rules is do the media's work for them. That is so true. If you can provide journalists, quote unquote journalists, reporters, who, you know, arrive on the scene of whatever event is taking place, whether it's the general conference going on at the United Methodist Church, right? They don't know really anything that's going on. Because you know how, like, I am not an expert on what's going on at the UMC, okay? But I've spent probably now the last week with almost all of my free time to do research into the stuff about the history of the UMC and Methodism, and watching podcasts, listening to them, reading interviews, stories, going to their websites and stuff. It's a lot of work, and it takes a long time. And most reporters, you're on an eight-hour shift. If you're a local reporter, you're on like an eight-hour shift, and they assign you to, you know, you go to your morning meeting, you show up for work about half an hour or so in, you go to your morning meeting, and okay, we got, you know, five things going on today. Let's assign these out and go, you go here, you go there. So then you arrive at the place, whatever, you got to find somebody to talk to, you got to line up some interview or something, and you got to shoot a bunch of video, and then you got to package up the story, and then you got to do the live shot or the fake live shot, whatever it is. And then that's the end of your 8 hour shift. You got to make slot. You got to do one story on your shift. And then the next day, you're on a completely different beat. You're doing a different story. You're at a house fire. Now you're at a car accident. Now you're at the UMC. Whatever, you don't know all of the background on this stuff. It's very difficult. So if somebody comes along and they're like, here you go, we're going to be out front and we're going to be banging drums and we're going to be playing music and we're going to be screaming and yelling, and maybe we light something on fire because fire looks really good on TV. Right? They're going to do your job for you. You don't even have to know the issue. All you need to do is show up and say, and when I tell you this, you're going to see it and read it and hear it everywhere, which is you're going to show up and say, some people are out here protesting. Critics are out here making their voices heard, right? But what is that? What does that mean? All that means is that some people want the media to amplify their message. That's what they're doing. We call it earned media in the biz. Now, here's the thing. Colonizing the faculty, colonizing the clergy, right, which is creating conditions to push out conservatives or traditionalists and then restrict admission to progressives. That has occurred on the campus, in the academy, with professorships and such. But here's what James Lindsay points out. Can it succeed at seizing power? Yes. Will it work? No. Is it sustainable? No. Does it create chaos and tyranny? Yes. Right? That's the point. You have an institution that's functioning. Can the revolutionaries seize power within it? Yes. Will their ideas work? No. Will it create chaos and tyranny? Yes. And that's the point.
All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.